Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, guys, and welcome to another installment in the typically Patreon-exclusive show, Bizarre Inquiries, where we let our minds wander with all of your guys' listener-submitted questions. I am the one that they call Shane, alongside with...
Just Orin.
A.K.A. the Big Bad Boo Daddy.
Yeah, I didn't know if we were doing nicknames this time.
It's always fun to do nicknames. Dude, you locked yourself in. You're just known as the Big Bad Boo Daddy now. I'm gonna call you that at conventions, and it's just going to become a thing that everybody just calls you the Big Bad Boo Daddy.
Yeah, I need like a shirt with like the hello, my name is, and just put like Big Bad Boo Daddy on it.
Please, at Small Town Monster Fest, just grab a name tag from somewhere. If you ever see one on a desk somewhere, or when you walk into a building, just grab a hello, my name is tag and just write Big Bad Boo Daddy from Bizarre Encounters and just walk around the convention with that, please.
It doesn't take a whole lot of arm twisting to convince me to do things like that. So
all else fails, bro.
Allotments in me, it'll be great.
I'll get a sticky note and I'll just draw it myself and tape it to your chest, need be. We're gonna make it happen.
I'm sure we can find a name tag somewhere. But so kind of jumping into tonight's episode, this is going to be a bit of a continuation from last week's episode that hopefully all you guys listened to and enjoyed. When we asked the question, what cryptid do we think is most likely to actually exist? And so we talked about Bigfoot and kind of some of the less woo-woo, more flesh and blood, down-to-earth type Bigfoot theories. So that was a lot of fun. And as we said, this is going to be a yet-to-be-determined part series, depending on how much we let our minds wander. But anyway, that's kind of where we stand right now for this episode of Bizarre Inquiries.
So, diving into part two of what cryptids do you think are most likely to actually exist? Again, we kind of have different ideas on what we're going to cover for this, but we kind of want to make them episode-specific, so we can really get into just, like, one specific one. I know Orin and I were thinking along the same lines, but considering that I was the one that stated the question last week, we'll just kind of continue with this week. I'll give you first dibs to kind of start the conversation as far as what cryptids do you think are most likely to actually exist? Part two.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. We talk about this all the time on the main show, like how we don't necessarily plan things out. Like we kind of independently each do our own research, and then a lot of times that ends up overlapping a lot and things just kind of fall into place. And this is one of those situations. I mean, a few weeks ago we did the Cryptids of North Carolina on the main show, and we talked about
good old Normie.
Yep, we talked about Normie. Lake Norman monster, a kind of a lake sea monster type situation. Shane just recently covered, I don't know when this is going to air, but spoiler alert, if it hasn't already, there's going to be some Lake Monster type shit
I'm actually going to drop this on Thursday. I've been dropping these on Tuesday, but I'll drop it on Thursday so it falls after the episode, just for context.
Okay, there we go. So you guys theoretically should have heard that episode by then. And another kind of teaser, spoiler alert, this is going to kind of play into next week's episode, my topic as well. So as I stated in last week's episode, I think there's two big main categories of cryptids that I think are most likely to be real, true, living creatures. We already hit Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever, last week. I think the other one is lake monsters / sea monsters. I mean, kind of in the same vein as Sasquatch, it's just real easy for me to believe that there's either, if we're talking about the more like plesiosaur type situation or just big fish, crocodile type things like we talked about with Lake Norman, it's just not hard for me to believe that there's either, you know, some prehistoric something that survived or just these really big species of known creatures or some other kind of creature out there in our lakes and especially in the ocean. So that's just kind of where I fall on it, and I'm not going to ramble too much. So Shane, what do you think?
I mean, just to throw one right off the bat, going straight from legend to fact, the Kraken. I mean, we didn't want to believe that these things existed, even though every sailor talked about these things. And it was once until relatively recently that we discovered that these giant squids are actually real. And I mean, just trying to look at explanations for these things, most of the old depictions were these things destroying ships. And most people just thought it was just out there crazy stories because it was destroying a ship. But now you look at like the practical reason for it, and like the number one predator to giant whales is giant squids. And they try to wrap around them and attack them. And essentially, that's what these things were doing to boats. I mean, they were thinking that the boats were giant whales. So they were wrapping up, trying to attack him, thinking that they're going to get a meal out of it. And at least for like my context for this thing, we look about seeing these things now and these things attacking ships in the past versus now. Back in the past, ships weren't loud. They were sails. I mean, they're just getting pushed along the water. There wasn't fleets of continuous ships constantly moving through the waters like there is nowadays. So these things, one, have already kind of learned to stay away from certain areas. You have the engine hum, which assumably probably keeps a lot of these bigger things away. At least they know that it's not food. Versus back in the past, when it was just like one random boat would come by here and there, you know, they were probably more prominent staying near the top of the water because they didn't have a reason to be all the way down in the bottom of the water. They were trying to look for food towards the top. And I know that there's some whole thing about like schools of fish would follow these old ships because they would throw their waste, their food, all that kind of stuff off the back of the ship. So schools of fish would follow. So in turn, from schools of fish, there'd be whales that would follow. From the whales following, giant squids would follow, and then they would attack the ship. It was just going down the line with that one. So, I mean, again, that's just a primary one that went from legend to fact. So who knows how many other ones could be out there. And I mean, you take in the vastness of some of these lakes. I mean, I live in the Great Lakes area, and these things are basically inland seas. These things are ridiculous. Like Lake Superior, Shit doesn't float up because the water stays so cold at the bottom. That's like the whole legend with it, is that like ships never come back up, bodies never come back up. So like, who knows what could be existing down at the bottom of this thing? And not to mention just the vastness of water. You can form a team to try to chase a cryptid underwater, but as you're trying to do that, it's just going to take off to somewhere else in the water. It's like, it's way harder to sweep the water to actually find stuff. And if there are a group of people in the water moving around, if it's something that's going to attack, it's going to attack. But for the most part, most animals are smart enough now and have learned through the years to stay the fuck away from humans. And even if there are giant water cryptids, I mean, think about what humans do to whales, dude. Like, whales are intelligent. They sing their songs. They cry out in pain. So, like, if you're constantly hearing whales, these giant creatures, crying out in pain because of being around humans, I feel like any other big animal would probably learn and adapt to be like, all right, let's not go over there.
Yeah. And kind of piggybacking off all that, I've got kind of 2 points to throw out there. Number one, like you were saying with the giant squids and whatnot, if we talk about like the vastness of the oceans and just the things that we know exist, you know, like those gnarly ass sea creatures that are down deep in the ocean with like the antenna with the light on
the anglerfish,
yeah, and all that kind of shit. Like, we know some weird shit exists out there. Like, if we didn't know those things existed, we would consider those sea monsters, you know?
Look at the alien squid. That thing literally looks like it has a giant alien head. You've seen those things, or like the tall, lanky, weird looking things?
Yeah, I mean, Shark Week every year has some kind of episode about monsters of the deep, when they show the weirdest looking shit you've ever seen, and we know these things exist. So that was point number one. And number two, I mean, like we talked about a little bit with the Lake Norman shit, there's stuff in that lake, which is a man-made lake. It's just fed by an existing body of water, river, whatever. There's like species of jellyfish in there and possibly alligators and stuff that, like, one, they have no idea how they got there, and two, just theoretically should not be there. So if a man-made lake in the middle of North Carolina can have stuff that they have no idea how it got there, like you said, like Lake Superior or these basically oceans in the middle of, you know, the country, who knows what could be in those? So yeah, like I said, it's not much of a stretch for me to believe that there's some mysterious, strange creatures in lakes, and we already know they're in the ocean.
And I mean, even going on to the side of stuff that we already know and that exists and it's documented, you got to take in the idea about like ocean gigantism or possibly even lake gigantism. I know I talked about it in the Lake Normie Monster episode, and I know I also talked about it in the Lake Thetis Lake Monster episode about the whole idea behind, you already are fully aware of what something is, but if it gets bigger than you think it is, it's going to look like a different animal to you. I mean, especially if you're in that high state of fear where you see something that's way bigger than it possibly should be. And also within that too, I mean, with more space, the ocean just works differently as far as like things are able to get. Like, think about like whales. Whales are mammals. Those things were land species. They were way smaller. They moved into the ocean and now look at them. They're like the biggest animal on the planet. And it's because the ocean functions differently with the body, and it gives it the possibility to be able to get to these gigantic sizes because the pressure's working differently. So, I mean, again, even getting into classified stuff, they already know it exists. We could have classified something like 40 years ago, but if there's a pocket of these things staying farther down in the water, like who knows what size these things could potentially be getting to? You know, I mean, even goldfish, dude, we're fully aware of the fact you put this thing in a giant pond versus in a fishbowl, it's going to get way bigger in that pond than it will in the fishbowl, because aquatic things kind of tend to adapt to the size of the environment that they're in.
Yeah. Same thing like we talked about with Normie and the big fucking catfish that they find in those lakes. So yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot more to add to this one. I just think this one's pretty straight. Oh, as I'm dropping shit over here. but no, I think this one's just pretty straightforward. I mean, it's like I said, we know enough of this stuff exists that it's just not much of a stretch that there's weird shit in our lakes. So,
and I mean, even just bouncing into another possible theory, because I always found this one fascinating as far as the Loch Ness Monster goes, the whole giant salamander concept, that every continent has their own variation of a giant salamander. The only one that
may or may not be talking about this next week.
So I'm leading up into it. Not even intentionally, man.
Yep.
But at least like going to like the Lake Loch Ness Loch Ness Monster, Europe doesn't have its giant salamander. That doesn't mean that one may not have existed at some point in time. Like, scientists are baffled by the fact that there isn't one because there theoretically should be one. So we talk about like niche animals that are supposed to fit into specific places and just misidentification of them. Like, I've thrown the idea, because the giant salamander theory at the Lake Loch Ness Monster, that the depiction that you see of the head could actually be a giant salamander tail diving back down into the water, and people are just seeing this thing out of context. Or on the other side of it, I mean, maybe it is some form of like a head or something like that. But more often than not, I mean, if I'm looking at the image and I'm going with the giant salamander theory, I'm going to assume that what people are seeing as the head of the Loch Ness Monster is a tail. And going into like the old accounts of this thing too, people would talk about how it would come up on shore and it would eat livestock and it would do this and it would do that. I mean, if you have a giant salamander, there's slow moving things like sheep, because that was the main thing that I always said, that it would eat, it was like sheep, and it would come out on land and do this kind of stuff. I mean, it's definitely possible that it's just something that theoretically should exist, but we never actually caught up with it, and now it may be extinct out of the area, and the folklore kind of gets mixed through, where you have these old stories where it would come out on land, and then the new stuff is like, oh, people kind of barely spotted off in the water. Maybe it's two different things, or maybe it's just the fact that because those stories in the past existed, now people are looking for any excuse for it to still exist when it could potentially not be there. But even getting into the giant salamander theory too, I mean, the water in Lake Loch Ness is supposed to be very mucky, very dark. You can't see stuff moving in it. So even if you're on the bottom of the water, salamanders are kind of a weird texture where they're able to kind of like maneuver through things. You may not even realize that it's around you. And even if you're trying to do like a full scale view of like the ocean. Salamanders bury themselves. Salamanders go into caves and caverns and stuff. I mean, there could be a handful of giant salamanders that live at the bottom of Lake Loch Ness, and we're thinking that they're this giant sea monster when technically they are another cryptid, but we're thinking of the wrong thing.
Well, and kind of piggybacking off the salamander theory, I think I talked about this. I know I've talked about it recently. It was probably the North Carolina cryptids episode. It was either that or Judicola.
You know, I was trying to figure out what that reminded me of. I don't know if you watched it when you were a kid, but there was a Gullah Gullah Island.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the whole time we're doing that episode, PBS I'm like,
or some shit.
Yeah, I was thinking with the giant, with the yellow frog thing.
Yeah.
Every time I heard Judicola, I was thinking of, let's all go to Judicola Island. And I'm like, where is that from?
About that, but
I'm like, it's Gullah Gullah.
But anyway, in Cherokee legend, when they talk about like the moon-eyed people, part of that legend is this like giant, what they called a leech, that was like living in the rivers there in the fucking mountains of, you know, North Carolina, Tennessee. So if they've got a basically same thing, sea monster, leech, whatever you want to call it at that point, if they've got a story that far inland in a fucking little river, I mean, that's kind of just piggybacking off of the whole Loch Ness thing. Like, these things could have been very prominent and prevalent not that long ago.
And I mean, they could have been killed off because they're too dangerous to have around, which are all the old stories about avoid the waters, avoid this, avoid that. And that legend that you're talking about, I don't know if you mentioned it, what tribe that came from?
It was Cherokee.
So the Cherokee also had the legend of the Uktena, which was the giant snake that had this like stone in its head, and it would basically like give you mystical powers and stuff, but they're always seen around rivers. So there's still the cold connotation of these giant serpent-like beings, these giant beings that are around bodies of water, lakes, rivers, whatever. And again, these things being dangerous as they are, you'd kill these things off, you know, because you wouldn't want to risk one of these things getting to your kid. I mean, we hunted mammoths into extinction because they're a great food. So if something's threatening us, of course we're going to hunt it into extinction for our own safety and not having to worry about our kids getting eaten by something when they're just trying to go and get a bucket of water to bring over to the house, you know?
And there probably wasn't that many of them to start off with, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too. And I mean, a lot of this stuff that they could have been seeing could have been breeding populations that came in from weird places, because you get into the whole like giant snakes thing with like the Amazon. And a lot of them, again, are always seen near like the rivers, all the cryptid legends of the giant snakes. All these rivers in some way, shape, or form kind of move around and connect to stuff. And if you're a giant snake, you know, your entire life could almost be like one giant migrational pattern where you kind of go up around in like a giant circle. So the stuff seen in giant South America with the giant snakes that are seen near rivers, which I kind of associate with like lake monsters or like sea monsters, could be the same shit that they're seeing up in North America. And they were just using the waterways to do like a migrational loop, for example.
Yeah. And that would explain partially why they're finding this shit in these inland lakes that just should not be there.
I mean, they could have got closed off at some point, you know, they could have been migrating through, you know, maybe it was like a drought or something and they got kind of closed off into one specific area. And then once breeding populations happen in this area, now it's just something that's in that area when it was never intended to necessarily be in that area. Or maybe they got blocked off in an area, they formed somewhat of a breeding population, people were seeing sightings of these things, and then when the drought was over and the water filled back in, then these things took off and then they weren't seen again, and then they became a thing of legend again.
Well, I mean, we know sharks can like swim up rivers and be in fresh bodies of water at this point. So
salmons can too. I mean, yeah, even something smaller.
Big weird things do exist out there. You would certainly think that they could do that as well. So anywho, that's kind of where I fall on it. I think this one, I think, is even more plausible than Bigfoot, honestly, if you ask me. But that's just where I stand.
And at least for this series, hopefully you guys are enjoying it. Give us some feedback on it, because we can do a handful of these ones, but we'll probably at least do one more.
Yeah, and I think since I kind of led the way with these first two, I think we should do at least one more, and we can hit whatever your thoughts are that we hadn't talked about yet.
Perfect. But we'll hit three at least for all you guys. And if you guys want a fourth one, please just shoot us a message and say, do a part four or something like that.
You guys can suggest some of the cryptids you think might actually exist, and we'll spitball about that, whatever you guys want.
Yeah, we want to get you guys more involved. We're getting a lot of listener questions submitted at first. Maybe it's because we kind of took a little bit of time off. People like lost interest for a minute. But we're trying to get you guys coordinated back in. And if you guys want to, one, drop a cryptid that you think is theoretically possible and some of your ideas behind it, we'll give you a shout out in the show for that, of course. And while you're also doing that, might as well drop another question for a future Bizarre Encounter or Bizarre Inquiries episode. And with that, closing it all up, again, submit those questions, join the Discord, give your opinions on all of this stuff. There is a specific channel on the Discord so you guys can give your opinions on any of the episodes that we cover. And at least for the next couple, until we get back in the swing of everything, I'm not going to make these Patreon exclusive. I'm going to put them on the YouTube and everything to hopefully get people back in the Bizarre Inquiries feel so we start getting you guys involved in it again. And then we'll go back to the one once a month normal feed and then back on Patreon. But hopefully you guys are enjoying it. Let us know what you guys think of the show. Let us know if it's worth the time. Let us know if you guys want to expand the show in a different way. But again, just to get involved, guys. I have been the one that they call Shane Squatch.
And I've been the big bad Boo Daddy, Oren Felix.
And guys, don't forget to stay bizarre and always let your minds wander.
Nessie is a salamander?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.